It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to ask a question, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk about the rights of the spouse in an estate in the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very complex area of the law. North Carolina recognizes in a very significant manner the, if you will, rights of a spouse in an estate.
Right.
And Wes and I can set up the conversation this morning by saying, you know, you have a husband and his wife come to your office, or maybe you just have one of the spouses come to the office. And of course the conversation ensues that, well, you know, these are really my assets that I inherited. And I am desirous of them going to my children from a prior marriage. But I've been married to Mary here for the last 7 or 8 years or 10 years or whatever the facts may be. And she has her own assets or she doesn't need all of these inherited assets. The facts really can come from any scenario, but the bottom line is that in the state of North Carolina, there are significant rights that vest in the spouse just by the nature of a legal marriage. And we want to talk about what some of those are. Now, one of the first rights is the right under really ancient kinds of law or legal premises of known as the year's support. And this is just a law or recognition in the state that the first $30,000 of an estate can go to the surviving spouse, notwithstanding creditors. This is usually applied in smaller estates where that is needing to be applied. Maybe there is the home place, which is fine, not subject to creditors, but there's a $50,000 or so of personal property, money in the bank, if you will. But there are a slew of creditors. The state of North Carolina is going to say, well, creditors, you're not going to get the first $30,000. We're going to preserve that for the surviving wife or for the surviving husband so that he has some support, if you will, for the short term. After the $30,000, you can apply you can make a claim and attempt to get paid the amounts that are owed, but you creditors are going to have to stand in line after the first $30,000. So this is one of the rights that accrue as a result of a marriage in the state of North Carolina.
And that right exists regardless of the presence of a will?
Correct. It does.
That's an important right, I would imagine, and sometimes people have no idea. I mean, as you said, a complex thing. We think it's going to be very simple.
Right. But, well, this is, you know, one of the most, you know, basic rights with regard to a spouse surviving. You know, we always look at that issue, and I would agree with Cecil. I mean, the way we're able to use that as a tool is obviously, you know, in the event that the person passes away and has a spouse and there's a lot of debt there, then, but, you know, minimal assets or relatively minimal assets, then we're able to really preserve those assets for the spouse. And, you know, the creditors just don't get paid through this estate.
Right.
And that happens, you know, all the time. And that might be, a topic for a different show, different program where, you know, if you know what you're doing with regard to North Carolina law and you're putting the, you know, square pegs and the square holes and the round pegs and the round holes and doing all the things that the law requires you to do, then in many times creditors' claims by law just don't get paid. And who benefits from that? Well, the surviving spouse or their surviving kids.
Right.
Whomever, you know, it may be. So, you know, you should never take you know, the ostrich approach with regard to an estate. I'm going to bury my head in the sand. And if the bill comes in, I'm just going to pay it.
Right.
Because
right.
it's not like, you know, your cable bill coming in every month while you're alive or your electric bill and those type things that, you know, obviously need to get paid. For example, when we're dealing with someone who's passed away, then we have a whole different set of laws, circumstances, laws that we apply with regard to what has to be paid and what doesn't have to be paid as a matter of law.
Is the debt that comes under this, whether it's real property or if it consumer or unsecured?
Yeah, debt? If it's personal, yeah, obviously if it's secured debt, that's one thing. If it's unsecured debt, that's a different thing. In the event that the surviving spouse is a personal guarantor on some type of loan, that's a different thing. You know, so we have to look at all the facts and circumstances in order to get the absolute best result for the estate. And then obviously that flows down to the heirs.
Does this spousal right have to be applied for?
Yes, it does. It does. You have to make an application for the year's support. And clock it in, file it in the estate. And if you do not do that, then you do not perfect the allowance. Okay. Now, Ben, that's probably the simple one.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Even though we brought up a number of wrinkles it's still the simple
one. We're going to move now to category B, if you will, which is much more complex, and take the rest of the program today and probably even move into this next week, because it's called, the elective share. And of course, to set the scenario for our listeners this morning, this is the right of the spouse that, notwithstanding what the will might say,
right,
you have the right, the statutory right in North Carolina to elect your share. And so we want to talk about that statute. And it begins with the concept of, well, we're going to first define how many years you've been married. Okay, now Wes, you've got it there in front of you, and it's a percentage of the estate, if you will, which we're going to talk about more what the estate means here at some point, based on your years of marriage. And so if you've been married, what is it, Wes?
Right, so the way the percentages work is based on how many years you've been married.
Right.
So we look at the percentage of the total net assets. And the surviving spouse may elect to receive 15% of the total net assets if married less than 5 years. Okay. And 25% if married at least 5 but less than 10. 33% if married at least 10 but less than 15. And 50% if married at least 15 years. So it doesn't have to do with how many children you've had together. It doesn't have to do with what assets you've accumulated together.
Right.
It makes no difference with regard to that. It's all related to how many years you've been legally married as of the date of death. So this is, you know, people on the street have kind of heard you can't disinherit your spouse.
Exactly.
So even if there's no will, or even if there is a will that says, I don't leave my spouse anything, the spouse has the right to make this claim for this elective share. And, you know, in the event there's no will, then obviously, you know, a sidebar to this is that the spouse would have a choice. I'm either going to take my intestate share, which depends on how many kids there were, depends on a lot of different variables, or would choose to take the elective share, which, if the folks have been, if the husband and wife been married for a long time or 10, 15 years, then it's probably that's going to be the better choice as opposed to the share through intestacy. So those are the choices there. Yeah. But you can't disinherit your spouse unless there's an agreement through a prenuptial agreement, postnuptial agreement, where the parties, the husband and wife, agree that the survivor of the two doesn't have any rights in the other's estate.
Or limited rights.
Or limited rights, whatever the, I mean, that's just a contract. Yeah. So whatever the contract says with regard to that.
And this follows the year's support? I mean, this is,
this is just in addition.
Right. Okay.
Keep in mind that, that the year's support is limited to $30,000.
Right.
So that is just $30,000. That's just out there that a spouse can claim, really most times, to the exclusion of a creditor. This is now in addition thereto, a spouse can elect their share. And then their share is defined based on the number of years of marriage. But as you see, from what we are telling, it gets significant very quickly. I mean, 10 years flies by.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. 15 years. 10 years, 15 years. These are you know, you're married for ten years and it just seems like a blink. And so these percentages begin to apply very quickly.
All right. We'll have more questions coming up in just a moment. If you would like to ask a question, you can ring us now at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. I'm with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law and talking about elective share and spousal rights. So where does that leave us right now?
So, you know, we're talking about the right for the surviving spouse to make this claim for an elective share. Now, this is a pretty short period of time in which the surviving spouse has the right to make this. It's a six-month period of time after.
Oh, really?
Okay. That's right. So it's a six-month period of time. It has to be done in writing, has to be filed with the estate. It cannot be done through someone's estate, meaning if the husband dies and then within the next 6 months the wife dies, and before she dies she does not make that claim,
right.
Can't be done by her executor.
Okay. It has to be done by the surviving, the living spouse.
Yep, right. Or through power of attorney, in the event the power of attorney has that right. But most powers of attorney would at least arguably have that right. So a really short period of time in which that claim needs to be made. Now, then we get into the issue of what do we look at to determine what are the total net assets? And the reason that matters is obviously because the surviving spouse, if they make the elective share claim, gets a percentage of their deceased spouse's total net assets.
Right.
It's not just a percentage of the probate assets, which would be like, you know, the things that pass under the will. So, this is really unusual in the law, really. You know, when we're looking at what you can claim against, normally things like IRAs, you know, retirement accounts, these type things.
Life insurance.
Normally, that is just in its own category with regard to being able to collect against it.
Yes, outside of the estate, kind of right?
Passes by beneficiary.
Yeah, yes.
Right. So when we're looking at total net assets, though, you know, we're going to look at any assets that are in the name of the deceased. This could be real property. Okay. This could be IRAs. Now, you know, life insurance, really, there's not much value in that. And that's if it's like a term policy. If there's value in it, cash value at the time of death, then we can, then that is brought into it. Also, we look at, and this is really interesting the way the General Assembly did this, because this law has only been in place since 13. This hasn't been on the books very long. The General Assembly set this up so that it allows for the court to look back for a year prior to death with regard to any transfers. So if there are any assets transferred out of the spouse's name within a year, that gives the clerk of court the right to claw back those assets and count them. And I think the idea there, Ben, is that, you know, let's say we have someone who is, who's elderly. And let's say that their child is the power of attorney, under the attorney in fact, under the power of attorney. Well, if they're wise and they know about this elective share claim, then we're in a situation where that attorney in fact could start transferring assets to himself, herself, and so on and so forth to mm-hmm. defeat the claim of maybe this second wife or this third wife who's mm-hmm. not the mother, you know, of this
right.
child.
Right.
So the General Assembly basically included that callback provision that allows for any assets that were transferred within 1 year of the date of death to come back into those total net assets.
Mm-hmm.
So the way this works procedurally is obviously the claim gets made, and then there's a period of time where there's a built-in discovery process where you have to, the estate has to then provide information with regard to the calculation of the total net assets.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event that they don't do that, they don't provide that information, this statute also allows the clerk of court to require that and allows for the attorney's fees of the spouse who's made the elective share claim to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
So they have covered it, you know, from one end to the other, and they've been very much in this statute, you know, favorable to the surviving spouse
sure.
here.
Sounds like it.
So it should be, you know, all the provisions that we would want to see for someone who's making the elective share claim are there so as to make it as much of a streamlined process as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there are penalties for trying to hide things. There are penalties for not disclosing transfers within a year.
Right.
There are penalties for not providing the information, the account statements, for example. Information with regard to annuities, information with mm-hmm. regard to the retirement account. So
well, one thing on that, I mean, if the clerk can claw back some of the transfers, it doesn't mean that's going to get cashed out and split up, and because it
right.
could be the percentage of the remainder, right?
Correct.
No question.
It could be
yeah.
an offset.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Be offset.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it could be a situation where assets were transferred. We mm-hmm. see how much they were. It's $100,000.
Right.
Okay. Well, $50,000 of that under, let's say, someone who's been married 15 plus years has got to go to the surviving spouse. Well, let's say there's a piece of real property that's going to get paid.
Comes out of that.
That's right. Everything's going to get settled out and the elective share claim is going to get paid that $50,000 and whatever other amounts mm-hmm. upon the sale of that piece of real property, the home or whatever mm-hmm. it may be.
Now, a couple of things, Ben. This look back for 1 year is similar, you know, it's very similar to the concept of, well, we have estate tax that will be due and payable, when my father dies. And so let's just go ahead and give $300,000 to each of the three children.
Right.
And bring him down underneath the estate tax, threshold and gift it away,
mm-hmm.
you know, within the last 9 months of his death. Well, that doesn't work.
Right.
Okay. There is coordination between gift tax and estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Here there is coordination between gifting and the net asset value of the estate for purposes of valuation for the elective share.
Again, so keeps everything transparent.
It does.
Right.
It does.
All right. Well, there's more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harv Allen Collins. You can call us if you'd like. You can also go in online at harvallencollins.com and listen to past shows or call them for an appointment too at 726-9050. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harv Allen Collins.
Yeah. So talking about the elective share claim of a surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ben, this normally comes into play when we're talking about a second or third marriage.
Right.
Normally, if we're talking about the marriage of 30, 40, 50 years and the two or three kids,
mm-hmm.
then most spouses want to leave everything equally to each other and then to the kids, you know, depending on the circumstances. But that's the typical situation.
Yes.
Okay. But, you know, the scenario where this really comes up is that, you know, we have kids from a previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe one of the spouses passed away, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the father, the husband gets remarried or the wife gets remarried.
They're married for 4 years.
Yeah, or it could be 16 years
yeah,
or 15
right.
years, you know. And, you know, the intent normally is not to leave everything that the first marriage,
mm-hmm.
the 25, 30, 35, 40-year-old marriage accumulated, the assets accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
Intent is not normally to leave a large portion of that then to the second wife, third wife, or husband.
Right.
Okay. And because, you know, then that is going to trickle down to that side of the family with regard to the children.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, the big question mark would be, what do you do to make sure that your intent is carried through? Because the statutes say this is the way it's going to go if an elective share claim mm-hmm. is going to be made. So again, the question mark is there a way to plan around this
mm-hmm.
so as to keep your intent intact. Well, as we mentioned before, issue number one there would be a prenup.
Mm-hmm.
Let's address this and keep our assets separate, and so that there's not a right to make an elective share claim. And I'll take care of you in my will.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take care of you in my will.
Right.
You know, or a trust or whatever it might be. But in the event that hasn't been done, then there is very strong planning that can be done that Cecil can go into with regard to use of an elective share trust
mm-hmm.
to provide for the surviving spouse, but for not this large percentage of the assets, you know, to pass on to the other side of the family.
Right.
So he can talk a little bit about that.
Couple of things, and we will talk about these planning techniques. We'll do a whole program on that next mm-hmm. week. Those of you out there that don't think you might be able to listen next week, keep in mind you can always listen later on the website. One thing to go back to a minute is that if for some reason there was also that $30,000 year's allowance applied for by right. the surviving spouse,
mm-hmm.
and then in addition thereto, they file for an elective share, then the $30,000 is going to be credited toward whatever the elective share amount ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just to clarify a little bit about that from us talking before. Ben, this situation can become complicated when powers of attorney are in effect.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there has been, and you know, it many times it's not just three or four marriage. I mean, our 3 or 4 years of marriage,
right,
our
right.
experience with these files is, you know, 10, 15, mm-hmm. 17. Again, it seems to be that these years just fly by.
That's right.
You know, someone gets married in a second marriage at 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They very likely are married for another 10 or 12 or 15 years before mm-hmm. there is a death. We see a lot of files in that category.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And of course, what I'm leading up to here is that now, you know, dad dies. He's 85 years old. He's been married for 15 years to his second spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But mom is now, you know, 80 years old and mm-hmm. is being represented through her power of attorney.
Right.
She doesn't want to make the elective share, but doesn't want to make the election. She knows what their verbal agreements were and their
right.
bed talk, if you will. But is her power of attorney, her agent under the power of attorney, her oldest son, is he legally required to make this election?
Well, let's leave that as a cliffhanger yeah. for next week, and we'll come back to that here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvella Collins, Attorneys at Law. Again, you can call and make your appointment at 252-726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.